Dear Jesus, may I enter into the eternal divine order of God to place my absolute nothingness in the heart of the Most Holy Trinity, to give to my God the joy of fulfilling the purpose of my existence by doing all the acts of my life through the Immaculate Heart of my Mother Mary and in the divine will of God. And in this same manner, may I live, pray, act, eat, walk, sleep, and do everything. May my soul be devoid of any other longings, wants, or desires, and may you, my beloved divine will, do with me whatever you want or desire. All I ask is that you bind me to your most holy will so intimately that I may never swerve from carrying out what I know to be your good pleasure, and that I remain so docile to the movements of your divine will that you never perceive even a breath of resistance in my soul to your requests of me. Come, divine will, with all the angels and saints, especially my sweet Mother Mary, to touch my forehead, to imprint on it the Holy Spirit, and infuse in me true light, so that I may understand the truths and the good that are in these writings and prayers. Amen. So we want to begin with August the 1st, 1926. And the title here is that we're talking about the secret of Jesus. This is a very, very important message. We have some very precious messages tonight. I was longing for my sweet good, Louisa said, the life of my life, and since he was not coming, I thought to myself, how hard is his privation. Ah, Jesus doesn't love me anymore. She keeps this up, you know. And not only have the caresses and the kisses and his great shows of love, which he so abundantly gave me before, have they all ended? In other words, God is no longer love. But his lovable and enrapturing presence also keeps me waiting longer and longer. Now, her problem is very simple, and that is that, to use a very Irish expression, she's spoiled rotten. She has seen the Lord so much, she has received so many signs of love and affection from him, that she can't tolerate at all that he isn't continuing. And she says that, oh God, what pain, she said, what a continuous martyrdom. And she describes this martyrdom as a life without life, a life without air, a life without breath. So she's actually feeling suffocated. So when she says, Jesus is my life, she actually means it literally, that she can only live if he sustains her because her life isn't normal at all. My Jesus, have pity on me, on your poor exiled one, she says. But while I was thinking of this and other things, beloved Jesus came out from within my interior, which of course, kingdom of God is within. And leaning his arms on my breast, he said to me, I don't know if that's leaning his elbows on her breast, he said, my daughter, you deceive yourself in saying that I no longer love you as before. On the contrary, you must know that my kisses and caresses, the shows of love I gave you, were the outpouring of my love. Unable to contain it in my interior. You see, for most of us, he doesn't actually give you these external signs. He contains it within his own interior, how he feels about you. And he said, I showed it to you with many loving signs. And since between you and me, there wasn't a great deal of work to do. I think that's absolutely brilliant. Wouldn't you love that he could say that about you as well? I would give anything I'd pay him to say that about me. That there was very little work for him to do. He said, so therefore I showed you the stratagems of love. Everything's for a purpose. He didn't just show her signs just for the sake of it, or to give in to her, or to give in to himself. It's not that at all. Everything is for a purpose, and he's telling her that she's actually ready for heaven. That's incredible. There wasn't much to do. Because we have seen him and read that he has said before that he was simply dusting her soul. Well, I would think that if my house only needs a dusting, it's not in a bad shape. So he didn't have much work to do. But this served to prepare you for the great work that was to be carried out between you and me. In other words, everything has a purpose. The Lord doesn't waste his time, his energy, his grace, or anything. And when one works, he says, there's no time to amuse yourself. So he says that you have to give up the enjoyment if you're going to dedicate yourself to a work that needs to be accomplished. However, in spite of this, love doesn't cease, but it is increased 100 times, strengthened and sealed. Look at the sealed. It's permanent. Okay? So, again, she's inclined to make decisions that he's not with her and everything because of her feelings, and he's telling her facts are actually different. So in the next paragraph, we have a very important piece about the secret of the divine will. Now, my daughter, having shown to you the outpouring of my constrained love, it's kept within himself because the rest of us don't give him the outlet for it. Okay. And he said, I wanted to move on to give you what was contained within me, which, of course, is the divine will that he wanted the whole world to have. I wanted to communicate to you the great secret of the kingdom of my will, which had not been known for the 2,000 years of Christianity. People only knew about doing God's will. So, and I wanted to give you the goods that it contains. And when important secrets are communicated, and this is the most important secret of the whole history of creation, that needs to be looked at. This is the most important one. He's already told us many times that creation and redemption are leading towards this. This is the culmination of what he wants to do. So he said, in that context, amusements and kisses and caresses are put aside. More so since the work of the kingdom of the supreme volition is exuberant, full of vigor and full of life, and the greatest that can exist in the whole history of the world. So there's so much energy in this. He has got to put that energy into Louisa and channel it from her out into the world. But something else had to happen, which is going to come up in a moment, which I find absolutely fascinating. Okay. Therefore, manifesting my secret to you surpasses all loves together. The fact that you have been chosen to have this culmination of God's will for the whole human race revealed to you, this is it. This is the most extraordinary sign of God's love. It surpasses all loves together because in the secret there is the sharing of one's life and of one's goods. In the secret there is trust. Watch this now, it's coming up. And there is reliance. And do you think it's trivial that your Jesus has trust in you? That's incredible. And that you are the object of my hope, he says. Now, if you've studied the Bible, some of you have studied much more of it than others with me, you will know that the big problem God has all the time, no matter where you go from Genesis to Revelation, the problem God has is that we can trust him, but he can't trust us. And when you come to the culmination of the Bible in the book of Revelation, he can trust the human race so little that he gets the angels to do his will. He can't trust anybody on the earth. So for God to tell a human being that I can trust you and that you're the object of my hope, I mean, there's no words to explain the privilege, the honour, the glory, the massive grace that is involved. But not just any trust, he said, or any hope, rather the trust of entrusting to you the kingdom of my will. He has handed it over to a little creature who was born the same as the rest of us. And handing over to you the hope that you would place the rights of the kingdom of the divine will in safety and that you would make it known for me. Now, the thing I find completely fascinating, apart from all the gift and all the privilege and all the rest of it, he has Louisa in a bed for 64 years. And he's going to accomplish this from somebody who can't move out of the house. Many of us are inclined to think that I can do nothing for God because I don't have the opportunity to go here, go there, do this, do that. He says you can do it just right where you are. Right where you are. You know, the most perfect spies are the ones who pretend they're not, and they just carry on as normal, and nobody realizes who they are, and therefore they can do their work perfectly. And he's saying, I have put you in this hidden way in the world, and I can accomplish everything I want in you. It doesn't matter what, whether you're married or single or what, widowed or whatever your condition is. It actually doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether you're old or young. It just simply matters that you open up to the divine will and allow the divine will to work in you and through you. It's an incredible privilege. It's what he's doing in us and through us. What we're doing is opening up and cooperating. That's what we're doing. And the more we open up and the more we cooperate and the more we lay down our crown at his feet, as the 24 elders do in the book of Revelation in chapter 5, anything the Lord wants, they take the crown off their heads and they lay it at his feet. That is total surrender, whatever you want. And I love that expression of St. Thérèse of Lisieux, where she used to say to the Lord, I choose what you choose for me. That's a massive level of surrender, but also liberation from the self. So Jesus is trusting her, and he will make the divine will known. She does ask him every now and then, how on earth are you going to do this? I'm stuck in a bed. But we're going to have a message tonight where he lets it out what he's going to do, and she has a crisis about it. Now he said, having entrusted to you the secret of my will being the essential part of the divine life. If you have your own book with you, would you please put a huge VIP on that? It is the essential part of the divine life. I would not know how to give you a greater gift than this. So the very fact that little nobodies like us are allowed to cooperate with the Lord and join in the divine mission at all, it's privilege beyond our capacity to understand. How then, he said, can you say that I love you less than before, when he's explaining this incredible privilege? Rather, you must say that this is the great work required of you and of me, two of us together. Now, we've had loads of examples in volume 19 alone, let alone any other volume, where he compares the massive grace that was given to our Blessed Mother so that she could be the one through whom redemption came to the world. And this massive grace is given to Louisa so that she's the one who can bring the divine will to the world. But considering that the divine will is the essential part of the divine life, to take an ordinary, small, little creature and to do it through her, it's a massive revelation about God, about his humility. He could so easily lord it over us. He could so easily dominate us. He could so easily force us to do it. But no, he goes to the tiniest little creature who will cooperate with him, and any other little creature who wants to cooperate with him, he'll work through them. It's 2 Corinthians 12:9. My power works best in weakness, Jesus says. I think it's 2 Corinthians 12:9. So he said, this is the great work required of you and of me in the kingdom of my will. You must know that I am always, now look at the word always, always occupied and all intent on working in you. Why is that? Because everything depends on her opening the door and making the way for the rest of us to go through. So at one stage, I expand your capacity and then I instruct you. And many times I move on to work actually together with you. And other times I actually make up for you. That's brilliant. Will you underline that a little bit? That at a moment when you can't do something, that he will make up for us. He is so intent on his divine will being manifested upon the earth. It's fantastic. I make up for you. In some, he says, I'm always occupied. And this says that I love you more and more, but with stronger and more substantial love. So when I was sitting with that today, I always spent a couple of hours with it just before the class. The thing that struck me was that Louisa was saying to the Lord something like, Lord, do you love me more than these others? Just as Jesus had said to Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these others do? It's really incredible. And so Jesus responds with facts and not with feelings, we're inclined to get confused on the feelings thing. So if you're not feeling very wonderful today, you think that the relationship between you and the Lord might have changed. It hasn't changed. Now, on August the 4th, 1926, he talks about the four floors of the divine will. So please do not confuse this with two messages back in which he spoke about the four different stages of reaching the high height of the divine will. We're going to have a geographical message this time. The last one was about our particular relationship with God. So Louisa said, my days, my hours are always a nightmare in this, the very hard privations of my sweet Jesus. Oh, how painful it is to pass from light to darkness. Absolutely. We know that in the physical thing. We also know it if we move from a time of great grace and privilege to a time of trial. It's actually very difficult to go from one to the other. But Louisa's having this constantly, this extraordinary presence, and then she goes back into this awful nothingness. And while one thinks she's going to enjoy the light, he escapes like a flash. She's been saying that since volume one. One remains in the dark, but even more so, become much more painfully aware of the darkness when you have known the light. Now, when I was under the press, that is the heavy weight of this trial, of the privation of the light of my sweet Jesus, and feeling that I could take no more, my dear life, my highest good, moved in my interior. I want you to notice how often Louisa says the same thing, that Jesus waits until she can take no more. I call that his cliffhanger move. He always waits and waits and waits to see, would you trust him that extra inch? Would you go that extra mile in trusting him? And very often the mistake that we make is that we will give up far too easily. And so on the cliffhanger moment he comes, he does it all the time, and therefore it's definitely one of his strategies for operating with us. So I said to him, Jesus, how can you leave me? Now, he's just told her he never leaves her, but he has told her that umpteen times. Without you, I don't know where I am. And he, all goodness, told me, my daughter, what? You don't know where you are. Are you not in my will? This is all teachings we've had for the last 10 volumes. The house of my will is large. And if you're not on one floor, you must be on another one, but you're in the house. What he's clarifying there is that if you are in the divine will, you're in the divine will whether you have a headache or not. And you're in the divine will whether you're asleep or awake, whether you're working or praying. It's there all the time. It's 24/7, 365. You're in my will. So if you're not on one floor, you're on another. In fact, he said, my will has four floors. He loves confusing us, you know. So do not confuse this with the message we had the last day. It is very different. The first floor, he said, is the low level of the earth. This is geography we're talking about. Okay. It's the low level of the earth. That is where you find the sea and the earth and the plants and the flowers and the mountains and everything else that exists in the lower part of the universe, the low world. My will dominates and rules everywhere because his divine will is in everything. Its place is that of queen. Now, the thing I cannot explain to you, maybe someone else in the divine will has more experience than me, why it is queen and not king. Maybe it becomes king when he has conquered and we have entered the New Jerusalem. I don't know. But it just strikes me that he says it's queen, it's not king. Otherwise, he's reaching out to Louisa because she's a woman. I don't know. I just can't answer that one. Its place is always that of queen, and it holds everything in the palm of its hand. Now, the second floor, this is geography, is that of the sun and the stars and the spheres. So we're going up into the planets. And the third one is what he calls the azure sky. I think we would call that the emptiness of space. Looks blue from where we're standing. And the fourth one is the fatherland, which is mine and that of the saints. It's the final home. So he's going to be telling her that when you do the rounds, you've got to travel on all four floors. So it's a totally different message to the one about the four stages of entering into the divine will. So if you go around in the lower part of the universe, these are in your rounds, in your acts. You will find the divine will waiting for you in the sea, that you may unite with it to do what it does. As it carries out its love, its glory, and its power, the divine will waits for you on the mountains, also waits for you down in the valleys and in the flowery fields. The divine will waits for you in all things that you may keep it company, so that you may omit nothing. Even more, you will be the repeater of the acts of the divine will. And once you have gone through the first floor, move on to the second, and then you will find the divine will waiting for you with majesty in the sun, so that its light and its heat may transform you and make you lose your being, and you may know how to love and glorify as a divine will knows how to love and glorify. Now, there's the point that's being made. You're doing your rounds. And you go from the earth and you go into the planets and you go from there into the emptiness of space and you go up into heaven. Okay. But what he's getting at there is that you will learn how to love God and glorify God as he himself knows how to love and glorify. Therefore, you'll know how to do it in a divine way. Okay. Therefore, go around within our house, which of course is the entire universe, in the works of your Creator, because he waits for you everywhere. That's Psalm 139. That you may learn his ways. Oh my goodness, the Psalms, all over the Psalms. Lord, teach me your ways. Lord, teach me your ways. And the tragedy you find in the book of Numbers, for example, is that the people refuse to learn his ways. And that's lamented in Psalm 95. So, Lord, teach me your ways. I'll give you two examples, Psalm 86, verse 11, and Psalm 25, verse 4. So, it is extremely important for us to learn the Lord's ways, that is, how he acts with us, how he operates with his creatures, how he operates in the universe. Because if we don't learn that, we're just simply saying words. We're saying somebody else's words. We're simply repeating somebody else's words. But we're not actually going there. Louisa actually went there. And when you're in the spirit, I knew this long before we got to divine will, that in the spirit, in your prayer, you can travel anywhere. You can visit all the people in prison. You can visit all the people who are sick. You can visit all the people who are having tragedy. You can visit them all in the spirit. There's absolutely total freedom in the spirit. So we have to learn his ways and what he wants to do. And the more you learn how he operates in the spirit, the more he will use you. But if you don't learn it, you'll only be repeating other people's words. And they may be nice words, but you're only repeating other people's words. You have to learn his ways. And you have to repeat what my will does in all created things. That was what Louisa was learning. In this way, you will be sure of being always in the supreme volition. And not only this, but you will be always with me. And that's what she's lamenting, that she appears to not be with him, that he seems to have moved away from her in the privations, which of course is absolutely impossible. He can't move away from her. They are inseparable, and he's going to say that to her now. You must know that I am inseparable from my will, and Louisa is inseparable from him because she is completely in the divine will now. And I'm inseparable from my works, because if he's not in the mountains and the hills and everything else, and in the stars and in the planets and in the animals and the plants and everything, they won't exist. I am inseparable from my will and from my works. And therefore, since you are in the divine will, I will be with you and you will be with me, but in a more superior way than just simply seeing him in the flesh. And I want to give you 2 Corinthians 5:16, where the early Christians complained that they were sort of second-class citizens because after all the apostles and the first crowd had actually seen Jesus. And St. Paul says that that's not how you see it. Even if you saw him in the flesh and you knew him in the flesh, that's not the way it is now. We all know him in the spirit. And in the divine will, we all know him in the divine will, and we all know him as the divine will operating in us, no matter what your previous experience was. So that's 2 Corinthians 5:16. So having said this, he disappeared like a flash and I remained in the dark. That's just the comparison between the darkness and the light, much more than before, but continuing my acts in the supreme volition. So she knows that she is to continue the work that she's called to do. But while I was doing this, I prayed him to come back to his little daughter. And this time, I love this. I absolutely love this. She knows exactly how to get around him. I think that when a woman is married long enough, she knows exactly how to get around her husband. Otherwise, what is she doing all these years? Watch what Louise is going to do now. This is so feminine. I had to laugh. I prayed him to come back to his little daughter, saying to him, watch this now, how to pray. My Jesus, I pray you by the power of your own will. And since your will is spread throughout the whole of creation, filling it completely, it is your own will that prays you in the sun to come back to your little newborn. It prays you in each star, it prays you in the azure sky, to hasten to come to the one who cannot live without you. It supplicates you in the sea and in the roaring waves, in its sweet murmuring, to come quickly to your little exiled one. Don't you hear, my love, my voice in your will, resounding in all created things and in all creation, praying, supplicating, sighing, crying for you to return to the little one of your will? How can so many voices not move you to pity? How can so many sighs not push you and not make you fly? That means fly back to me. Don't you know, O Jesus, that it is your will that prays you? And if you do not listen to your will, it is your will that pays the price. My, she knows exactly how to get around him. And I believe you cannot do without listening to your own divine will. So while I was saying this and much more, I would have thought what I've just read is enough. No, she said there was much more. My sweet Jesus moved in my interior because he hasn't gone anywhere. He is within her. And we have been reading that since the very earliest volumes, that the kingdom of God is within you. That is Luke 17:21. And 1 Corinthians 3:16, know you not that you are the temple of the living God and the Spirit of God dwells in you? He always comes to her out of her own interior. So he hasn't gone anywhere. And sharing his bitterness with me, which were too many. So here she is pleading with him to come back. She wants the beauty of the love side of their relationship. And he shows her the only thing he has at that moment, which is the bitterness that's coming from the earth through its rebellion and sin. And she said how many sad things that he showed and how pierced his heart was. So while she is longing for him, she has to realize that he's not just dealing with his little exiled one, that he is dealing with all of the exiled ones. He's dealing with his whole church, and he has to deal with all centuries as well. So afterwards, as though wanting to cheer himself, making himself seen with his usual pen of light. I like the word usual. That means this has happened many, many times, but she doesn't mention it very often. She has mentioned it a few times, but not very often. With his pen of light. Of course, he's in the spirit, okay? And if he's going to write, he's going to let her see a picture of him writing. But of course, he doesn't need paper or parchment or anything else. What he does is he writes on our spirit. And that's Jeremiah 30:34, that I will write my law on your hearts. It's an interior writing. So he has his usual pen of light in his hand. And he told me, my daughter, let's put everything aside. Let us speak about the kingdom of my supreme will, which interests me much. So to cheer himself from all the bitterness that was coming from the earth, he turns to speak about his divine will, because that's where the earth is going to recover and come back absolutely into God's order. And God will be able to have his will done on earth as it is in heaven. So it cheers him to speak about it. And therefore I would give you Jeremiah 29:11. I know the plans I have in mind for you, plans for peace and not disaster, reserving a future full of hope for you. And Jesus has said that to her many times as we go through the volumes. Let us prepare a future full of hope, even though at this moment they're in a disaster. So Jesus said to her, don't you see how I'm always in the act of writing the qualities of the divine will, the celestial laws of the divine will, the power of the divine will, its divine prodigies, its enchanting beauty, its infinite joys, the order and the perfect harmony that reigns in this kingdom of the divine fiat. I'm always writing this in the depths of your soul. Now, I don't know your reaction to this at this particular moment, but my reaction is, Lord, please take up that pen and write all of that in my soul as well. And in the soul of everyone who is trying to live in your divine will, let each one of us experience you writing all of this wonder in our souls so that we can in fact do what you want us to do and respond in the way that you want us to respond. First, he said, I make the preparations. I form in you all the properties of the kingdom of the divine will, and then I speak to you so that by feeling is what is written in the book, I would say experiencing its properties within yourself, you may be the spokesperson, or I would say the postman, of my will. You will be the crier of it. You will be its telegraph. He uses all the things that people have discovered, and he's going to talk about electricity in a minute. So the telegraph, the postman, the town crier, whatever image you have of someone proclaiming a message, he said, you're going to be that for me. But notice she has to experience it in herself. She notices that he is writing. He says he's doing it entirely within her own being. And once she has experienced it, she will be able to give it to others. Now, it would be extremely difficult for us to give divine will treasures to another person if we hadn't experienced anything of it. It would only just be empty words. You can only give what you have. You can't give what you don't have. So the one who proclaims this with the greatest effect and the greatest grace is, of course, the one who has experienced it at that level. So he said, you will be a little trumpet with a shrill sound. Now, the trumpet with the shrill sound is the ram's horn, the shofar. It gives a very primal, shrill sound. And you may call attention to those passing by to listen to you. Notice passing by. That's a very interesting expression, because when you study the scriptures, the Lord is always passing by. And the expression passing by in the scriptures means that in the events of your life, in the things that happen, whether they're good, bad or indifferent, the Lord is always passing by. It's always an opportunity for grace. It's always an opportunity to grow. And the mistake we can make is to let an opportunity pass. In other words, we let the Lord pass by. We don't say what the two disciples said on the road to Emmaus. Oh no, come in, sup with us. And then he revealed himself to them in a new way. So we have to be the people who the Lord can use to spread the wonder of the kingdom of the divine will to others. The teachings I give you about the kingdom of my will be like many electric wires. Now, you've heard me say before that whatever has just been discovered on the earth, the Lord uses that. And so people have become aware of the discovery of electricity, but that you can't have it unless your house is wired up for it. And he's going to use that to tell us that we have to be wired into the grid of the divine will if we want the divine will to operate in us as well. If we want the massive light of the unity of the light of the divine will to be shining in us and through us, we have to be connected to the grid. That makes sense, doesn't it? Wouldn't it be silly if my house was all wired up and I wasn't connected to the grid? So it'll be like many electric wires, which are such that when the appropriate communications are established, that means you've made all the connections to the grid and the necessary preparations are made. A single wire is enough to give light to entire cities and provinces. Once the preparation has been done and everything has been set up, then you can switch on the light. I remember a very wonderful moment in my life when we turned on electric light for the first time on top of a high mountain in the Cameroons in West Africa, and the people had never had electricity before. It was totally astonishing, and the reaction of the people was totally astonishing as well. But there was an awful lot of preparation to that, And one of the preparations was that we had to have a whole team of men drag a huge container up a very high mountain. They had to do it in stages because we wouldn't have the electricity without this gadget. So once you've set it up, then you can have the light. And I remember that particular night, we waited until midnight and we got the chief to flick the switch and we talked about God is light and in him there is no darkness. And they were really able to hear it. So the power of the electricity with rapidity greater than that of wind gives light to public and private spaces. So here, once you are connected to the grid of the divine will, it can happen instantly. The Lord can do the most wonderful things. The power of the electricity will be the fiat itself, which with enchanting rapidity will form the light that will cast away the night of the human will and the darkness of the passions. It's wonderful the way he's able to use all kinds of images to get the message across. Oh, how beautiful the light of my will be. In seeing it, people will dispose the devices in their souls in order to connect the wires of the teachings. Look at the way he's using electricity. It's absolutely brilliant. Okay. Once the teaching of the divine will is given to anybody, the people listening can connect the wires of their souls to the teachings and enjoy and receive the power of the light that the electricity of the supreme will contains. That means that as I am actually speaking, trying to reflect on this in some way, that the Lord can accomplish this in you in much shorter time than you will blink. It could just be instantaneous, but we've got to open up. We've got to, in this case, switch on the light or make the connections. Okay. Do you want to see what will happen? He said, look, I take one wire of my teachings linked to your soul and you emit your voice within the wire. Say something, he says. Say, you know, I love you or I adore you, I bless you or something. Whatever you want to say, he said, and then keep looking. So now he's doing an experiment with her. And so Louisa said, I love you. And that I love you changed into characters of light. He's trying to illustrate something spiritual for us. So in the divine will, she says, I love you. Those words were changed into characters of light and the electric power of the supreme volition multiplied it in such a way that that I love you of light would go through the whole vault of the heavens, fix itself in the sun, in each star, penetrate into heaven, fix itself on each one of the blessed in heaven, form its crown of light at the foot of the divine throne and enter even into the bosom of the supreme majesty. In sum, wherever the divine will was, there it would form its electric light. So a person in the divine will emitting this prayer, the Lord takes it and does this absolutely incredible thing with it. So wherever the divine will was, there it would form the electric light. And Jesus continued, my daughter, have you seen what power the electricity of the supreme fiat has? And how it reaches everywhere. The electricity of the earth diffuses down below at the most. It doesn't have the power to reach even the stars, but the power of my electricity diffuses down below, up high, in the heart, absolutely everywhere. And when the wires are disposed, that's the souls, with enchanting rapidity, it will make its way into the midst of creatures. Once the acts are done in the divine will, the Lord then will see to it that they will reach absolutely everywhere. It's the most beautiful image that's given to us. But he tells us that he's using this image of electricity to speak of our acts that have got to be transformed into light because God is light and only light can enter into that divine light. And our acts have got to be transformed into love because God is love and nothing unholy or unworthy can enter that presence, as we've said many times in Hebrews 12:14, and also in Revelation 21 and 22. Nothing can enter that holy city that's outside of the divine will. And therefore, the continuous transformation has got to take place in us. So let's look at August 8, 1926. Our work is to cooperate with God. He's working in us all the time, but our work is to cooperate with him. So, as I was in my usual state, I felt all abandoned in the arms of Jesus, Louisa said, and he, moving in my interior, said, "My daughter, the more the soul is identified with me," that would be level 3 going into level 4, "the more the soul is identified with me and going deeper and deeper and deeper into level 4, the more I can give her and the more she can take." At the very early stages of this journey, people have so much put in front of them, they may not actually be able to take much. But as we go deeper and deeper, yes, we can take more and we can give more. "It happens," he said, and he gives an example of a little stream near an ocean, but there's a wall in between the stream and the ocean. So it's like the sea and a little stream, which are separated by a sea wall. So much so that if the wall were removed, the sea and the little stream would become one single area. Now, if the sea overflows, because the little river is near it, the little stream receives the water from the sea. If its roaring waves rise in lowering again, they unload themselves onto the little stream. That's because the little stream is beside the sea. It can get this advantage. The water of the sea pours into it through the cracks in the wall as well. So the tiny little stream constantly receives the waters of the sea, and because it is little, it keeps swelling up and it gives back to the sea the water it has received. It can't keep it. And then it receives it again. So you have this very alive movement going between the two, giving and receiving, giving and receiving, giving and receiving. But if the little stream were far away, the sea wouldn't be able to give and the little stream wouldn't be able to receive. Its distance would put it in the condition of not even knowing that the sea was there. It's an absolutely beautiful, beautiful image. The sea is God and the little stream is us. And we have to be as close as we can in union with God and in the divine will to get more and more benefit from the sea of the divine will. But the further we are away from it, the harder it is to actually benefit. So the wall is our humanity in the next paragraph. So while saying this, he showed to my mind in practice the act of the sea and the little stream. So he shows it to her so that she can see it. It's not just intellectual information. "My daughter," he said, "the sea is God and the little stream is the soul. The wall that separates them is the human nature, which makes one distinguish God and the creature. The overflowings, the waves which rise continuously to unload themselves into the little stream, are my divine will, that wants to give so much to the creature that the little stream, being filled and swelling up, will overflow." That's John 7:37-39. "Fountains of living water will spring up from you for other people." So the little stream may form its waves, swollen by the wind of the supreme will, and may pour back into the divine sea to be filled again in such a way as to be able to say, "I live the life of the sea." That's Galatians 2:20. "I no longer live, Christ lives in me." I live the life of the sea. That's us saying, "I live the life of the divine will. I'm in the divine will. And even though I'm little, I too do what it does. I overflow, I form my waves, I rise, and I try to give to the sea what it gives to me." Now, that's exactly what we've been talking about for so long, about our acts and receiving from the Lord and giving back to him. We have this continuous divine commerce going on. You know that our countries would absolutely collapse economically if people were not giving and receiving to each other, buying and selling. There must be this continuous flow all the time. And for our souls to reach a fullness as well, there must be this giving and receiving between us and the Lord. So the soul who is identified with me, now that's actually living in the divine will 24/7/365, and lets herself be dominated by my will. Now, dominated is that she has surrendered her human will. She allows herself to be dominated by my will. That soul is the repeater of the divine acts. Her love, her adorations, her prayers, and everything else that she does is the outpouring of God. This is fantastic. is the outpouring of God, which she receives so as to be able to say, it is your love that loves you in me and through me. It's your adorations that adore you through me and in me. It's your prayers that pray you. And that's exactly what Louisa had been doing there a page back when she was asking him to come back. It's your will that investing me makes me do what you do and to give back to you your very own things. So there you've got the response that the Lord has been looking for all these centuries, not only of the Christian centuries, but the centuries of the Mosaic covenant as well, for the human race to reach back, that love is requited. It isn't left completely alone. So then Louisa said, Jesus kept silent. And then as though taken by an irresistible emphasis of love, I think that's an absolutely, utterly awkward statement. In other words, just reaching out in love, spontaneous love. Okay. It's the translator hasn't got a good handle on the English. He added, oh, the power of my will, how great you are. You alone can unite the greatest and the highest being with the littlest and the lowest being, making them one. I call that the I am not finds itself in the great I am. John 3:30. He must increase and I must decrease, but I find I am not the prophet, I am not the Messiah, I am not this, I'm not that, I'm not anything. But I find my completion completely in him. It's absolutely fantastic. Jesus says, the divine will alone unites the greatest and the highest being, which is God, with the littlest and the lowest being, which is us, making them one. You alone have the power of emptying the creature of all that does not belong to you. And that is a major part of the journey, the self-emptying. Major part of the journey, because if we don't do the self-emptying, he can't fill us. To be able to form in her with your reflections the eternal sun, which filling heaven and earth with its rays goes to blend with the sun of the supreme majesty. I mean, what he offers to the nothing is totally, absolutely amazing. St. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 6:17 that we become one spirit with him. So that was understood at the very earliest stages of the church. So we shouldn't be so amazed at what the Lord says here. Also John 14:20, you in me and I in you, both completely one. And this is what we're talking about here. So he says, you alone have the power of communicating the supreme strength in such a way that with your strength, the soul can rise to that single act of God the Creator. Only God can work this incredible miracle inside of us. Ah, my daughter, he said, when the soul does not live in the unity of my will, she loses the one strength. Now, this strength is the strength of the divine will that enables us to do everything we can't do. Okay, so the one strength is like the one will. So when we don't live in the divine will, she loses the strength in all her actions, and therefore all her acts not coming out of this same single strength remain divided among themselves. Love is divided, the action separated, the prayer is disjointed. And divided, all the acts of the creatures are poor, meagre, without light. And so, patience is poor. You've never been there, have you? Charity is weak. Obedience is crippled. Humility is blind. Prayer is mute, sacrifice is without life. Because since my will is missing the one strength that she needs to be able to do anything is missing. John 15:5, without me you can do nothing. Philippians 4:13, with him I can do everything, but without him I can do nothing. And notice that he's emphasizing that the divine will gives supernatural strength to us. I think traditionally we would call that fortitude. And the way I describe fortitude is the steel girders that they put into skyscrapers so that they can survive a hurricane. that strength that enables our patience to be rich and our charity to be great and our obedience to be spontaneous and our humility to be wide open and our prayer to be full of love and praise and all the rest of it. And so that your spiritual life is vibrant, exuberant, full of life. That's the strength of the divine will. It's just, I prefer the word fortitude because it means more to me. So we can do it with this strength or with this fortitude. We can't without it. Therefore, the people who are not in the divine will are left not only divided among themselves, but adulterated by the human will. And so each one is left with its own defect. So to summarize that paragraph, the divine will is strength, the human will is weakness. You can do nothing with the human will, you can do everything with the divine will. Okay, then he gives us an example in the next paragraph and he says, this is what happened to Adam. By withdrawing from the supreme will, he lost that great strength, that great fortitude of his creator. And since he was left with his own limited human strength, he felt hardship in all that he had to do. More so since the strength that he employed in performing one action would debilitate him, in having to do another, he would not feel the same strength. So in other words, he had a certain amount of strength and the more he would try to use it, he had less and less and less. When you're in the divine will, you have more and more and more because the divine is infinite. And it's a very good illustration of John 15:5. So he would feel debilitated. So he touched the poverty of his actions. Now this is a spiritual poverty that is not positive, it's negative. He touched it with his own hand. This expression that Louisa uses, to touch with your own hand, you have bitter experience. Not having the same strength, they were not only divided, but each one had its own defect. It's the same as a rich lord who possesses most extensive properties. As long as they belong to one owner alone, only, he can show off, he can make big purchases. Who knows how many servants he maintains under himself, and with the large proceeds that he receives, he keeps on making new purchases. But suppose that this property were to be divided among his heirs. Well, that's it. The great power is lost. The moment it's divided, it's lost. He can no longer show off as before nor make new purchases. He must limit himself in his expenditures and his servants are few. So his greatness, his lordship has vanished. What is left is just barely the traces of it. And that is what happened to Adam. By withdrawing from my will, he lost the one single strength of his creator. And with it, he lost his lordship, his dominion, and he did not feel the ability to show off in good anymore. The same happens to one who is not completely abandoned in the arms of my will. Now, I want you to notice not completely. It's the not completely thing. Human beings have the ability to, if they're 70% committed, that they think, well, that's enough, you know. It's the same happens for one who is not completely abandoned in the arms of my will, because with the divine will, the strength of good converts into one's nature. In the divine will, to be good and to do what God wants you to do becomes part of your own nature. And that poverty, that awful spiritual inability to do anything, no longer exists. So I want to leave it there for tonight. I think there's plenty there for us to look at. And the final challenge there, that we would surrender completely. And to surrender completely is Deuteronomy 6:4-10. Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God is one Lord. And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, and all of your being. The Lord wants everything. Because when we give him everything, then we can receive everything from him. So thank you for listening.